tied up inside.
Hello and welcome to the first edition of This Conversation Rocks, which is a podcast hosted by me, Diane Maythorn, and my very good friend,
Todd Atterbury.
And we're so happy to have you here. I thought, Todd, that we would start just by talking about how we met and kind of how this whole thing got started.
All right. So, what, 22 years ago? Started a conversation?
At least 22 years ago. I was trying to figure out exactly the date, and I couldn't pin it down, but it's been a really long time. And
it had to have been 1993, would be my guess.
Yep, I'm thinking that's pretty close. And then we've managed to maintain this conversation between us all of these years, despite time and distance.
Absolutely. Because it's worth noting that I live in Los Angeles, and Diane lives in Willow, Alaska.
Exactly. So forgive us while we are navigating the technical vagaries of a podcast between two locations. So, you know, one of the things that I thought about and that Todd and I have kind of talked back and forth about is that this idea of this ongoing conversation really reminded me of the book, The Vampire Lestat, which I loved when I was younger and just started rereading before we decided to go ahead and do this podcast. So I had actually found a quote that I thought really exemplified the whole concept of the conversation between Lestat and his ongoing family. So what do you think about that, Todd?
Well, let's hear it.
All right. So this is Lestat speaking. The words began to pour out of me as soon as they had out of him. And soon we were talking about a thousand things we felt in our hearts, varieties of secret loneliness, and the words that seemed to be essential words the way they did on those rare occasions with my mother. And as we came to describe our longings and dissatisfactions, we were saying things to each other with great exuberance, like, yes, yes, exactly, and I know completely what you mean, and yes, of course, if you felt it, you could not bear it. And then at the very end of the same chapter, Lestat gets home and hears someone tossing pebbles up against his window, and he sticks his head out, and Nicholas says, do you want to come down and go on with our conversation? So that's kind of the way I feel. I feel like we're going on with our conversation after all these years.
Absolutely.
With some screaming puppies in the background, I might add. We may or may not be able to edit those sounds out initially.
We're going to find out.
Exactly. So, you know, we thought that we would address something that's actually kind of impacting the both of us in different ways. And I asked Todd if we could please call this first episode Go Big or Go Home, because I know a lot of friends that I have are probably going to be pretty ticked off by this whole conversation.
I don't understand why people get mad when you start talking about something that is well backed by science, by evidence. This is not what we're going to talk about. This is not supposition. This is not, well, we just think that it happens to work this way. It's the way things fucking work.
Well, see, you already did it. You said the S word, science, right?
Right.
So we lost a lot of people right there.
Yeah, hello, explicit warning tag, right?
That's science. Right. You don't get the explicit on the podcast for saying fuck, you get it for saying science.
All right, so lay it out for us. What's our topic tonight?
So lay it out. We're going to talk about the measles outbreak in California, and it's important to me because I work as a nurse practitioner, and I see tons of people who refuse vaccines every day. And it's important to you because you are in Measles Central right now.
Disneyland is about a 40-minute drive in heavy traffic, 20 minutes on a good day.
Yeah, so in Alaska, that's Measles Central. So I did a little...
The amazing thing is, you know, to talk about it, the amazing thing is that this really hasn't happened before. And hopefully it won't happen again.
Right. I mean, there's definitely some hope that some of the fear that's coming out of this is going to change people's minds and change people's thoughts about vaccination. I did a little research today, just kind of trying to get a sense of the numbers since things started. And according to the California Department of Public Health, it looks like 40 people who worked at or visited Disneyland were initially infected. They initially contracted measles. And then the website just said that it spread to at least a half a dozen other states, but they didn't give exact numbers.
And we're back.
All right, so we were talking about the measles numbers, and I didn't get a great sense of the exact numbers, but I know that it's spread quite a bit beyond the initial infections, and certainly right. beyond California.
Right, so what I was saying was that, you know, here it is, you've saved up all your hard-earned cash for the year, decided to take your kids to Disneyland for the holidays. It's the one holiday you're going to have, the one vacation you're going to have, family of four, you're $400 in the door, just to get in the door. And you get to come home with a case of measles, which, despite what some people are saying, this is not a joke, right?
Right.
If you've got measles, this is pretty serious.
So I'll tell you something. One of the things that stunned me when I had posted something on Facebook about this is a former nurse, a former colleague of mine, actually made the comment about, oh, I don't understand what the big deal is. Measles aren't that serious. And it was so shocking to me hearing that from a healthcare provider that it just felt like even more reason that we needed to have this part of the conversation tonight.
So let's talk about measles for a second. As our nurse practitioner, tell us what it's like if you catch the measles and what happens.
Well, so I thought I'd talk a little bit about measles, mumps, and rubella, because that's actually what the vaccination covers. So I did a little bit more research today, because I'll be honest with you, I haven't seen rubella, which is the German measles. I've never seen...
God.
Yeah, no kidding. I've never seen the mumps, although there has been a related mumps outbreak in the Pacific Northwest, which
right.
I think is significant. And, but I have seen the measles, and I'll tell you, one of the sickest people I have ever seen, and I worked in the ER, so I've seen some pretty sick people, actually was a 40-year-old guy with the measles, and this was back when there was a measles outbreak in Juneau, Alaska in the late 1990s. So basically when you have it, you have a really high fever, terrible body aches, you're really photophobic, which means you can't stand to have any light. On in the room. But the big deal about the measles is you're lucky if that's all that you experience. What could potentially happen in the long run is people can end up with a seizure disorder, they can end up with a life-threatening pneumonia, they can end up with brain damage, and it's estimated that 1 out of 1,000 people who get the measles actually dies from the disease. So it's not just a childhood disease.
Brain damage. Yeah, but, right there, right?
Right, right, right. But I don't understand what the big deal is.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of just talking about mumps and rubella, German measles, real quick. So mumps actually can cause loss of hearing, meningitis, which is inflammation of the tissues that surround the brain and the spinal cord that can lead to neurologic damage, and it can cause sterility. And the German measles, rubella, can actually, for pregnant women, cause miscarriage or serious birth defects if a pregnancy does manage to go to term. So all three of the diseases that are covered in this vaccination are actually pretty significant, even though today we're primarily talking measles.
Yeah, and I'm kind of glad now that's really all we have to talk about, right?
Well, we could talk about the mumps, but, you know, one thing at a time.
We've been doing vaccination entry now for, what, six, 7 decades? Seriously.
At the very least, I have to be honest and say that I don't know the exact date of Jonas Salk and his polio immunizations, but I actually have a friend who was one of the original kids to get vaccinated against polio when those vaccines first came out. Of course, the first vaccines were actually back in the 1700s when Dr. Jenner recognized that milkmaids who were exposed to cowpox didn't get smallpox. So he used cowpox to vaccinate people against smallpox, and it was effective.
Yeah. I would say that it is, right?
Right.
We don't talk about smallpox.
Well,
anymore.
And God forbid that we end up talking about smallpox, and we'll go there in a minute, right?
Right. So, yeah. So, I mean, obviously we've had vaccinations for a long time.
Right.
We've had a serious push towards, you know, immunizing as many people as humanly possible in this country. For at least, you know, I want to say, you know, at least since the 50s.
And the really cool thing is, when you look at a chart that shows the rise of vaccinations and the drop in disease rates, they directly correlate.
Yeah, it's no joke, right? There's nothing to be confused about.
Right.
The more people get immunized, the less people get this stuff. The less people get this stuff, the less people die from it. All right.
So it kind of leads to the idea of herd immunity, which I think we've talked about a little bit together before, you know, which is the idea that the bulk of the people in the herd become immunized. So we protect the people who, for whatever reason, don't respond to the vaccine, who can't be vaccinated because they're too young to be vaccinated. Like a lot of those little kids in Disneyland can't be vaccinated because they're immune suppressed because they've got something like cancer or an autoimmune disease where they're on some kind of immune suppressant drug.
Let's be clear right there, though, right?
Okay, go ahead.
There are three, basically, you just outlined three reasons why you may not get immunized.
Well, and
one,
I should add,
you're too young.
Right?
Two, there is some medical reason. Well, actually, that's it. You're too young or there's some medical reason.
And the thing I should add to medical reason is there truly are people who have certain allergies that make them not good candidates for certain vaccines. It's not as extreme as the anti-vax camp would have you think. Anyway, you know, so the thing that's really interesting is herd immunity has been really hurt in a couple of different ways. But I would say the biggest way that it's been hurt is by this push with mostly celebrities, people like Jenny McCarthy, I'm going to mention her name, who have come out very, very ardently against vaccines and have gotten a lot of attention. As a result, we're surrounded now by fewer and fewer people who are choosing to vaccinate, and this is why these diseases are starting to come back.
And so where is this occurring?
You know, it's occurring nationwide, but the really interesting thing is that it is essentially an upper middle class Caucasian problem. It's mostly people who are highly educated and who think they have just enough knowledge to overrule their medical provider. You know, they do their research on the internet. They check it out with Dr. Google.
Right, where there's one report that is a complete work of fiction.
Complete.
That discredited I don't know how many times.
Yeah.
There is no link between autism and vaccinations.
Sure.
And yet people won't let it go.
Right. And that's the other word that we really have to bring into the conversation is autism. So the report that you're talking about was published in 1988 in The Lancet, which is a highly respected British medical journal. And the primary author is a guy named Andrew Wakefield. Since that time, Wakefield has been proved to have essentially made up a whole bunch of the stuff that he cited as evidence in his report. And the other 11 out of 12 authors have completely retracted their support for the article and have distanced themselves from him.
Has he then distanced himself from the report, or has he doubled down and gone on the speaking circuit?
He actually no longer has a medical license in Britain. It's been taken from him. He, of course, is held up by the anti-vax crowd as a martyr. So, you know, poor Andrew, look at what those of us who are pro-vaccine have done to his career. The other thing that's kind of interesting is that apparently at the same time that he was authoring this article that linked the MMR, the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, to autism, he was also in the process of developing his own measles vaccine, which probably would have made him a significant amount of money had it been successful.
I can just see it. My competitors cause autism. I don't.
It sounds like
clearly that's a billion-dollar formula right there.
Right, I think that's an awesome marketing strategy. So, you know, another thing that's kind of bothered me as this whole thing has gone around and around, and it's really been pretty prevalent on social media since the outbreak in Disneyland, is just the lack of respect for science and the lack of respect for people who practice in science-based guidelines, evidence-based guidelines. I've seen doctors and other healthcare providers referred to as sheeple when they follow recommendations about vaccine guidelines, and it's just so incredibly offensive to me. You know, it's so completely disregards the years of education, practice, and knowledge that I have and that my colleagues have. It makes me crazy.
Absolutely. Sheeple. Okay, so...
That would be me. You know that I'm one to follow the crowd.
People who don't want to believe that there is absolute certain proof that vaccines are A, helpful, and B, not harmful, are able to, tell the local city, state authorities that, screw you, I'm not going to vaccinate my kid, and you're going to have to put my kid in school?
Well, you know, it depends on the state. I can't tell you for all 50 states, and I'm not sure what California has. Maybe you can fill me in on that. But
you know what California has. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this stupid problem.
So in Alaska, there's essentially a vaccine an immunization exemption that is either a medical exemption, and that has to be signed by a healthcare provider, or you can do a religious exemption. But here's the slippery slope. If a parent chooses to say that they have a religious exemption to vaccines, and that's why they're not immunizing their child, the state doesn't ask. The school doesn't ask. Because how can we prove that someone's religious faith does or does not support their kid being vaccinated? So a lot of parents lie on that. I hate to say it, but they lie on that form, and their unimmunized kids are put in school with kids who are immune compromised, kids who have allergies and can't get vaccinated. And they're put in daycare with kids who are too young to be vaccinated. So the big hope is that, you know, this might turn around the idea of allowing those kinds of exemptions.
It's going to be tough. I mean, you know, let's be honest, that's going to be tough, right? Because Rand Paul,
right,
who is going to run for president here.
Yeah, let's not forget that. Let's not forget what presidential candidate Paul had to say about vaccines, and presidential candidate Christie.
I didn't hear Christie. What did Christie say?
He was pretty much along the lines of Rand Paul, but go ahead. You go ahead and talk about Paul.
Paul was just taking the position that, well, you know, it's kind of a parental thing, and, you know, the same old crap you hear from the right about, you know, the state doesn't have the right to tell you what to do.
Right. So I had someone refer to a similar situation, a family being reported for not having a child in a car seat, as those of us who encouraged reporting being members of the nanny state. And I said, you know what, if I save a kid's life, go ahead and call me Nanny McPhee.
Oh, absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely. I mean, when I was a kid, we didn't have car seats, didn't have to wear a helmet when riding a bicycle, blah, blah, blah. You know what? It seems like a stupid idea now, looking back on it.
Right.
You know, fortunately, I didn't give myself a traumatic brain injury. Fortunately, my parents were never in an automobile accident that would have killed me as a kid. All right? But that's just fortune.
Right. Well, you know, it always reminds me of what I tell people when I see them riding horses and not wearing a helmet, because you know that I have this passionate love affair with my horse. That kind of came out wrong, but you know what I mean. I always say, if I fall off my horse or if he bucks me off and I'm not wearing a helmet and I get a damaged brain, the person who pays for the hay goes away. There's no longer anybody to buy food for the horse. There's no longer anybody to pay the farrier so he gets his hooves trimmed. Who am I doing any favors if I don't wear a helmet? And it's the same kind of idea with vaccines, I think.
Absolutely. You have a responsibility to your fellow citizens. Society.
Yes, which brings up something else that just made me crazy. So I was watching, actually I was listening to the podcast because, you know, we don't have cable out here in the boonies, of Bill Maher's latest show. And he is really agnostic about vaccines and at times anti-vaccine. He was pushing back pretty hard against vaccinations, and I was really disappointed because I generally like Bill Maher, generally think he's funny and has some good political ideas. But he had David Duchovny, of all people, on his show as a guest, and Duchovny kind of shot back with the idea that giving of yourself, making the sacrifice to be vaccinated, is part of the role that you have as a responsibility and a privilege when you're a member of the herd. You know, that it's really part of your job as being responsible to the other people in your group.
That's the whole point.
Right. So there's actually some doc in California, I was reading about him and I wish I could remember his name, who basically came out and said, I really don't care if my unimmunized child causes your immunized child's death because I don't believe in vaccines.
That's perfect.
So it just makes me wonder where the whole concept of responsibility to each other has gone, and where this idea of respecting each other as human beings has gone. It's just, it's really maddening.
Absolutely, because the thing is that this wasn't a question. Vaccinations, these were not in question for the longest time, and I honestly believe that mainly they were not in question for a long time because our parents, their parents, they remember when they didn't have this stuff. They remember the kids that got the measles, got the mumps, got polio, whatever.
You right? are totally right. That's an argument that's come up for a lot of us who are pro-vaccine in the medical community, is that the younger generation has just lost any sense of what these diseases can really do, how devastating they can really be.
You know, and it's just like, why are you guys doing something that is going to hurt us collectively?
Right.
And they say, well, I'm afraid my kid's going to have autism. You know, and they say, and then they also point to, you know, autism is on the rise, which, you know, that's a whole different discussion, but it does have a lot to do with the fact that we're actually just classifying things better than we used to.
I think you're exactly right. And also, and oh, yeah, and you were making the point about why would you do something that hurts all of us, even though, you know, you, for example, don't have kids. So, you know, and I was going to say the same thing. I don't have kids either, but here's the deal. In healthcare, I work with medically fragile people every day. I don't have to get a flu shot. I don't have to get all these vaccines that are available. But you know what? I do, because it's my responsibility to keep my patients healthy. You know, just like I wouldn't go to work when I was really, really sick because I wouldn't want to make anybody sick. It's the same thing. If I can prevent an illness that could potentially harm one of my patients, why would I not do that? You know, the other thing, and so we were also talking about, you know, the generation of people who really push back against immunizing as people who don't see how the diseases impact people. Another thing that I would say is I just really see a generation of people who have lost their faith in science because there have been so many changes in guidelines over the years. You know, I mean, we keep adding vaccines. We just changed the guidelines about blood pressure. We just changed the guidelines about cholesterol. Now apparently cholesterol is not as bad as we thought it was. And so people look at that as medicine making mistakes. I'm not saying that medicine doesn't make mistakes, but the point that I wanted to make is that science, unlike faith, adapts to new information.
Oh, right. Absolutely.
You know,
Absolutely.
That's what we're supposed to do.
Back specifically to the vaccination thing and science. Okay, you can believe that it doesn't work, but that flies not only in the face of scientific evidence, but just your own observation. Right?
Right, absolutely.
You did not grow up with people who had the measles, mumps, rubella, polio, right? I did. My next door neighbor did. We did not see these diseases for the better part of 40 plus years that I've been alive, right? And now all of a sudden, boom, now you go to Disneyland, you get measles.
You know, so I actually had a mom say to me recently, I don't want my baby to have any vaccines that I didn't get as a kid. And I just looked at her and I said, you know, I would really encourage you to rethink that because you're pushing 30. Your kid is brand new out of the womb. Science has evolved a lot in 30 years. There's a reason we've added new vaccinations. We're not just making shit up as we go along.
I guarantee if there was a vaccination against autism, not possible, but if there was, everybody'd be running out to get it, regardless of the fact that there might be some other consequence to it, you know?
And let me just point out one more thing that really pissed off a bunch of anti-vaxxers when I said this on Facebook. I swear to you, my parents who don't vaccinate are very often the first in line looking for antibiotics when their kid has a sniffle.
Right.
Explain to me how that works.
Do not do anything for the cold.
Right. And just explain the logic to me. So one part of healthcare is really, 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 really bad. But antibiotics, which we know are being overprescribed, which we know are developing major resistance to bacteria, or bacteria developing resistance to them, rather, it's okay to ask for those and overuse those. The logic is just not there.
All of this is not based on that. Because if it was, if there was any logic involved, the odds are still overwhelmingly in the favor of vaccinations.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, that brings up one more thing that I wanted to say about herd immunity. So at least 80% of the surrounding population has to be vaccinated for herd immunity to be intact. So for all those people who are unvaccinated, either by choice or for medical reasons, at least 80% of the people surrounding them have to be protected against whatever disease we're discussing. I don't know what the herd immunity like is in California, but in the area that I am in Alaska, approximately 20% of our second graders are fully vaccinated, which means we have no herd immunity to several of these very serious diseases.
No, not at all.
We're basically an epidemic waiting to happen should the right disease land at the right time.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
California's doing all right, you know, except for some of the more upper middle class enclaves of idiots.
Right. It's affluenza, right?
Yeah. And this is the thing that is always the concern, is that there is always enough people who are legitimately not able to be vaccinated to always make that number difficult to reach.
Right.
Without people that, you know, voluntarily getting on that bandwagon to the detriment, ultimately, of themselves, their kids, their society. And I guarantee you, if your kid catches mumps, measles, rubella, brain damage, sterility, did you say sterility?
I did say sterility, and I forgot to mention the swollen testicles. I'm not kidding you.
No, bad things happen, people.
Yeah.
Bad things.
You know, and again, it's just the overwhelming selfishness that really, really makes me insane. It does not surprise me that Rand Paul, King of the Libertarians, made the statement that he did.
Oh, what else is he going to say, right?
Right.
If he says anything else, then, you know, people would say, well, he's not a libertarian. I would like to point out, though, that, you know, he is a doctor, but of alcoholism. So,
well, his dad was a gynecologist, and people listen to him about everything, so.
You know, but I want to point out, right, that's another thing, too, though, is that there are doctors, and there are doctors, and there are a variety of specialists and everything. And, of course, there's that whole thing about if you have a PhD from, you know, whack job university, you get to call yourself a doctor.
Right. You know, and actually, there's a strong argument these days for calling medical doctors physicians.
Yeah.
So we're very clear about what people's educational levels are.
Absolutely. Because, you know, and I'm not knocking ophthalmologists. I wouldn't knock dentists. You know, these are guys specialists in their area, you know, and I would absolutely rely on their judgment if I went to them with a problem. But when it's not your area of specialty for you to talk like you have some, you know, expert opinion about it, you're just an ass.
You know, I would say that nurse practitioners get the same basic education in certain things. Physicians get the same basic education in certain things. Same for physician assistants. But you're right. You know, once somebody moves beyond that basic education and decides to go into an area of specialty care, that's their primary area of interest in further education. So you can actually lose track of some of the mundane things that we family practice people do because you're not doing it every day.
And honestly, I would hope that a specialist would.
Right.
Because I would want them to devote their time to being special.
Absolutely.
You know,
it's always one of those things where I tell the patient, yeah, I know that you're mad that your cardiologist is working with you, but that's not part of his job. You know, that's my job as a primary care provider.
Exactly.
And so we were talking about just the whole concept of providers sticking to their specialties and having faith in the provider who is practicing in the area of specialty that you are accessing. For example, most people who order vaccinations are primary care providers. That's what we do. That's prevention. That's our job to keep you from going to those specialists we were talking about earlier by hopefully preventing disease that they need to look at further.
So, any final words we want to have on vaccinations? Again, I just want to stress to people that get vaccinated because otherwise you're going to go to Disneyland, you're going to infect a lot of people, you're going to ruin a lot of family holidays.
Yeah.
And to that, I say, fuck you.
So, and usually I'm not moderate. I'm a little more I am definitely not agnostic about vaccines. I'm very pro-vaccines. But the final word I want to leave people with on the idea of vaccines, in addition to, God damn it, go get your kids vaccinated, is ask questions. You know, don't just completely write off the whole idea of having a conversation with the person who's ordering the vaccinations. I'd rather talk with you and convince you with logic than have you completely blow me off because you're terrified of something that Jenny McCarthy or Rand Paul said. Everything that I say to patients, and I was telling you this earlier, is that just because you believe in science, or don't believe in science, thank you Neil deGrasse Tyson, doesn't mean it doesn't work.
And the other thing is, I would say that if you're not educating yourself, if you're not really looking at this stuff, keep in mind that anything that is evolved enough, scientifically evolved enough, is indistinguishable from magic. So, stop believing in magic. Start believing in science.
So, before we go to our oh, by the way moment, which is what I decided to call the thing that we're both just going to bring randomly to the table.
So, moving on to our oh, by the way moment.
So, our oh, by the way moment is going to be that time when we each bring something to the table that the other one isn't really expecting. So I've done a lot of talking this time. I'm going to tag you to go first.
Okay, so this comes from the New York Times this week. Deeper ties to corporate cash for doubtful climate researcher. For years, politicians wanting to block legislation on climate change have bolstered their arguments by pointing to the work of a handful of scientists who claim that greenhouse gases pose little risk to humanity. One of the names they invoke the most is Wei Hock Soon, known as Willy, scientist at the Harvard Smithsonian Center for Astrophysics, who claims that variations in the sun's energy can largely explain recent global warming. He has often appeared on conservative news programs, testified before Congress, and in state capitals, and starred at conferences of people who deny the risks of global warming. However, what he didn't tell anybody is that he has accepted more than $1.2 million from the fossil fuel industry over the last decade, while failing to disclose that conflict of interest in most of his scientific papers. At least 11 papers he has published since 2008 did not have such a disclosure attached to it, and in at least 8 of those cases, he appears to have violated the ethical guidelines of the journal that he published his work with.
Yeah, so no surprise, right?
Yeah, I'm sorry, did you say 1.2 million. Okay, I just wanted to clarify the number. That's not pocket change.
It's not change, right? You know, over 10 years, it's $100,000 a year. That's a pretty good living. It's science. And the science is pretty solid. 97 scientists agree that global climate change is occurring. 3 scientists don't, right? Out of every 100. And so, at the end of the day, it's the same thing. It's science. You gotta go with the science, and when you see that these guys are actually getting paid to generate potentially fake reports, or at least conflicts of interest in their reporting, you have to walk away from this. And you only have to look outside the window in rural Alaska to realize that climate change is fucking us up.
I'll put some pictures on our Facebook page, so you can find us on Facebook at This Conversation Rocks. Just search for us there. I've got some pictures from the Iron Dog, which is the snow machine race that usually precedes the dog sled race, the Iditarod, and the trails are bare, completely barren of snow. I have a picture from Nome today, February 22nd, 2015. The streets are full of water. There should be enough snowpack to support those racers coming into Nome and sled dog teams coming into Nome 2 weeks later, and it's just not there.
Outstanding.
I always tell people all you have to do if you really want to find out the truth about climate change, talk to somebody who's lived in Alaska for 50 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, it's no joke, right? The polar ice cap is melting. The snowpack is disappearing on the tundra.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if you're in Boston, you're screwed right now. Yeah.
Well, you know, and that's the evidence, quote unquote, that climate change deniers use, is that, you know, there's snow in Boston, so there is no such thing as climate change. Well, right. I would dare them to go take a walk on the streets of Nome tonight and tell me that.
Exactly. All right, so that was my moment for the week. What do you got?
So my, oh, by the way, isn't nearly as cool as yours, but I've kind of developed this obsession, and I have to blame it a little bit on Laverne Cox, who stars on Orange is the New Black. I've just gotten really interested in the whole transgender movement and the whole struggle that transgender people go through. And I somehow became aware of a woman named Kristen Beck, who was initially born as Chris Beck, and she served as a Navy SEAL for 20 years before she came out in 2011 as a transgender female. There was a documentary made about her called Lady Valor. You can stream it on Amazon, and it is worth every penny. She is just phenomenal. And she actually wrote a book called Warrior Princess that I've read once, and I'm already ready to go back and read it again. So my by the way, moment is that actually Kristen and a friend of hers recently started their own podcast, and it's called Everyday Valor. And I just wanted to encourage people to go and look for that podcast, because their goal really is to try to find something positive that people are doing to help other people every week and to highlight that. They're trying to find the unselfishness on this planet and bring it to people's attention. And the first couple of episodes have been really phenomenal. So I just wanted to give a shout out to them in support and encourage people to go look for them. I guess the other thing I got to say before we go is that we have some podcast art in the works. And I'd just like to give a shout out over to the guys at Fighters, which is a podcast about The Walking Dead. Kirk Manley, who is the artist in that duo, is working on some some art for us, so we're looking forward to introducing that with our podcast. And that's about all I've got to say.
All right. Well, here's where we go out. And thanks to everybody for listening, and we're going to keep doing this.
And it's just going to get better from here.
Absolutely. Roll outro.
And as will be our tradition, we're going to go out on a little bit of wisdom from Neil Gaiman, speaking as Death in Death, the High Cost of Living. When the first living thing existed, I was there waiting. When the last living thing dies, my job will be finished. I'll put the chairs on the tables, turn out the lights, and lock the universe behind me as I leave.